Good afternoon. You're listening to KVNF. It's just after 6 o'clock, and this is Local Motion, your weekly source for what's happening in your world here on the Western Slope. I'm Travis Bubenik, and I'm joined in the studio this evening by Hugh Carson, a retired firefighter of some 40 years who's also had much experience with all sorts of disaster management. And he's been on KVNF before to talk to us about some of his firefighting experience, but today he joins us to talk about a different form of natural disaster, and that's flooding. On Friday, September 13th, just after historic flooding devastated the Front Range, Hugh and a handful of other firefighters and emergency personnel from the Western Slope were called to Fort Collins to assist with emergency operations there. They were tasked with essentially taking over all emergency operations within Larimer County. Hugh, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
No problem. My pleasure.
When we spoke just before you left to Fort Collins on that Friday, you told me that Larimer County authorities had essentially exhausted their ability to handle these floods, and that's why they were calling in people from across the state. And you also told me it was going to be a long-term assignment. So I guess just starting off, did it wind up being a long mission? How long were you guys there for?
Actually, it did not turn out to be more than just about a two-week assignment. We'd pretty much got our objectives and those of Larimer County, who was intimately involved with our incident management team at all phases, wrapped up 13 days. About the 26th is when we demobilized. Just a couple of little background. I'm a member of the Rocky Mountain Incident Management Team A, which is composed not just of Coloradoans, but personnel from South Dakota, Wyoming, Colorado, and Western Nebraska. And that's how these interagency incident management teams are comprised, from geographic areas and not just one state. So what you do have is a wealth of experience in wildland fire, but the teams are still feeling their way after being under the incident command system for 25 years. They're feeling their way out in this, what we call, all hazards environment. Earthquakes, floods, hurricanes, human-caused terrorist events, whatever, on how to integrate with not only local authorities like the Larimer County Sheriff's Office, but also with entities from FEMA, such as the Urban Search and Rescue, USAR teams, incident support teams, and just a multitude of other agencies. The one thing that is different between wildland fire and all hazards is the latter, all hazards, is incredibly more complex than wildland fire. Wildland fire is pretty straightforward, but when you get onto a flood or a hurricane that has literally devastated the infrastructure of the local area, you're like our liaison officer was dealing with 10 different power companies, all the way from Xcel Energy down to something like DMEA here locally.
So tell me, how common is this for, emergency personnel in other parts of the state to call you guys in, to look to fire management teams to deal with other natural disasters like floods?
Over the past, let's start with Katrina. That's always a good place. But prior to Katrina, we were being called in on other disasters. One that comes to mind was Hurricane... I forget the name of the hurricane, but the federal wildland fire teams have been called in, I'd say, for the last 20 years. The difference here in Fort Collins and why it was such a success from my and a lot of people's perspective is usually wildland fire is assigned to a FEMA emergency support function, and this highly trained incident management team ends up running a supply distribution center with highly skilled air operations people unloading ice. Not the best use of the expertise there. The Larimer County Sheriff and his undersheriff, Bill Nelson, were singularly responsible for insisting that the incident management team integrate not only Larimer County, but urban search and rescue teams from as far away as Missouri, Los Angeles, et cetera. And with of particular importance, since this was a big aviation operation, which is my area of expertise, with the Colorado National Guard. I can't say enough about the pilots and crew chiefs and management of the National Guard here in Colorado. They did it to it.
I want to ask you about the different agencies and personnel that you were working with in just a minute here, but let's back up for a second and, we've talked about this before, but just to set the stage again, give me an idea of what it was like when you first arrived on the scene there in Larimer County. What were some of the first things you saw, and did you get a sense of the time for just how severe the devastation really was?
That's an excellent question. Just to back up a bit, the entire area had been experiencing some pretty large amounts of rainfall all the way from the 9th. And then on the 11th, it started raining very, very hard. Moisture was being sucked up from the Gulf and put into a easterly flow. In other words, the moisture was coming out of the east. There was a low over the Great Basin that was keeping the moisture centered right on the Front Range of Colorado. So the day of the 11th, the night of the 11th, is really when it all hit the fan. Unlike previous floods, the Big Thompson flood, the 1997 Fort Collins flood, this was persistent moisture in heavy amounts. The other two examples were thunderstorm-driven with larger amounts of rainfall per hour, but very over in a really quick amount of time. So I moseyed on down there at a high rate of speed on the 12th, got some sleep. We had an in-briefing with Larimer County on the morning of the 13th. We were not supposed to take over the incident until the morning of the 14th. So we received our briefing. The main point of the briefing is this is a big aviation show. So as the Air Operations Branch Director on the team, I hustled out to an old deserted airfield, Chrisman Field, on the western edge of Fort Collins, and encountered a situation where there were at least three Chinook big twin-rotor National Guard helicopters operating, three or four Black Hawks, a couple of Lakotas. I sat there in a pickup with two deputy sheriffs from Larimer County and just watched a number of aircraft go out. And 20 minutes later, say a Chinook would come back, the back end of it would open up, and upwards of 30 citizens and pets and luggage would come out of that aircraft. And it was a very, very fulfilling scene for all of us there to see Americans come together, despite all our other differences, in time of need, and get the job done as quickly and efficiently as possible.
It almost sounds like you were entering a war zone there. I mean, what was the mood like? Was it calm, collected, or were people sort of disheveled by this sudden destruction?
It was surprisingly well-organized, Travis. And again, on fires, say, where people are being run out of their subdivisions, things are tremendously chaotic. They're tremendously emotional, et cetera, et cetera. Where the emotion was happening was up on the hill. And by the hill, I mean 11, 12,000 feet peaks surrounding these mountain communities, scattered houses. People, by 3 a.m. September 12th, houses were literally floating down what were formerly creeks but were now rushing rivers. The Poudre River and Big Thompson Canyon, I mean, when we got to the point of being able to fly up there and assess the damage, that beautiful, windy canyon road, it's gone, and it's gone for several years. The amount of devastation in terms of houses was fairly significant. Only five people, to my knowledge, died. It is a tribute to the response by, again, Larimer County and the Guard that hundreds of people didn't lose their lives in that. That's how dangerous it was. But to answer your question, surprisingly calm, measured approach is what I encountered when I got out there. I mean, it was high tempo, but it wasn't screaming, yelling, etc. And the key thing was watching these people who had been stuck in the rain and wind up there for 3-4 days, walking by that pickup truck 10 feet away was a huge look of relief, collective relief on their faces that they had gotten out of that chaos.
And when you were there that weekend of the 14th, I mean, there were still communities, like you said, that were completely cut off by floodwaters. Roads and bridges were still underwater. There were thousands of people still stranded, you know, by that weekend, the 15th, on that Saturday. What kind of challenges were there just inherently to the search and rescue operation, given that there were just no roads?
On Saturday, the word was there's upwards of 2,000 people still up there. Of that 2,000, an unknown number, but probably 1,000 still missing. So when you hear that, even with the experience I have, I say, oh my gosh, we are in deep, deep, big time. It turned out that the estimates were overestimated. People started checking in with their relatives. The missing list started dropping first by hundreds, and then by the time we were over, it was down to maybe 50 still missing.
And it dropped pretty rapidly,
it did.
If I remember.
It did. And I geared up on Saturday by calling the state EOC and saying, hey, I need definitely 3 Chinooks, 7 Blackhawks up from 2, and a couple of Lakotas. And I'm an air ops director who operates on the philosophy of conservative over-ordering. And in that case, I was prepared for a couple of thousand, but didn't need them. So I can get rid of aircraft as fast as I can get them.
Right.
So those aircraft were reallocated over to the Boulder area.
Yeah. So what are some of the essential tasks, and I guess just specifically with dealing with this disaster, of an air ops director? I mean, that sounds like you direct the air traffic, but what actually were you doing in this scenario?
Yeah, that's a common misunderstanding. The word director implies that I'm up in an aircraft directing aircraft. Actually, I'm ground-based, except when I want to go fly, but my philosophy is you have a limited number of successful helicopter flights in your life, and I've certainly had enough. I don't want the odds to go up. I never flew it, which is amazing. But, you know, I've seen my share of disaster scenarios. Underneath me, or working with me is my preference, rather than saying they work for me. But I have what's called an air tactical group supervisor who is up in the air, performing airspace coordination, looking out for ground crew safety, spotting targets in fire. Obviously, that's flaming fronts or targets. In this case, it's people on the top of roofs with sheets waving in the air saying they need to get rescued. Another person I have is an air support group supervisor who handles all the logistics on the ground, of making sure the helibases from which we operate our helicopters and our fixed-wing bases for fixed-wing are adequately supplied with maps and plans and food and the whole shoot and match. Underneath that, you have a helibase manager who is really the linchpin of the entire organization. The helibase manager is a linchpin because whether you have 10 helicopters or 40, as we had during the High Park fire, same location, is the one who makes the gears turn smoothly. And in both High Park and here, we had a gentleman, good friend of mine, out of the Payette National Forest, who just made the whole operation run smoothly and applied a lot more risk management and safety as the days rolled on.
I'm just wondering, I mean, was there ever a time when you guys felt like the cards were stacked against you? I mean, did it get frustrating when you were just grounded there and there were still people out stranded on these, you know, areas that had now become islands in the mountains that you couldn't get to for that day?
I think the most frustrating day, as I heard it, was before we got there on the 12th. They were grounded all day. One of those days at the beginning, they were grounded all day, and that was particularly frustrating, especially the National Guard, who were ready to rock and roll and literally had the capability to haul off hundreds of people an hour even. Mm-hmm. And that was really frustrating for them. But what do you do? The emergency is caused by extremely bad weather, and until it moves out, you can't do much. By the time Sunday rolled around, and I remember that day, we could do some limited flying, but most of the really extreme work had been done on the 13th when it cleared up. Mm-hmm. We didn't get them all, but in those situations, something's better than none, that's for sure.
You say that you were ground-based, but did you actually have any direct encounters with the people that you were going out to rescue from their homes or that you were shepherding back to shelters?
Actually, the closest I got was them walking 10 feet by the side of the pickup. And I, I'll tell you what my philosophy is, Travis. During the 30 days I was on the High Park fire, I did not speak to one civilian other than to order dinner at 11 o'clock at night. My philosophy is to stay in the zone, stay focused. And when I saw that first group of people come out of the back of the Chinook and start walking up with a look of relief and hugging each other in their face, there were a few tears that came down my face. So it's not like I'm not properly emotional. It's just I can't afford. And I found the best way is not talk to folks. Mm-hmm. There's other people on the team in the recovery mode. That's their job. Best thing for me to do is just stay focused on aviation safety and efficiency.
Now, let me ask you about some of these residents that were stranded. I mean, I know you said you didn't have a lot of direct contact with them, but as these people were getting rescued, getting shepherded onto these Chinooks and everything else, taken to shelters, you know, a lot of them hadn't had access to TV or internet or radio. Did you get a sense of how aware they were of how severe this flood had actually been right there at that moment when they were
clueless.
Being rescued?
Absolutely clueless. If I thought I was clueless, they were virtually without any information except that which they observed in their particular situation. They probably had a real good inkling that there were literally thousands of other people in their same situation. But it wasn't, and I'm going to jump back to an early question that I forgot to address, is when did the authorities, i.e. the team, the sheriff's office, eventually FEMA, get a good idea of the extent of the devastation out there? I would say it wasn't until the road and bridge people from Larimer County, we flew them around day after day. I wouldn't say it was until the 15th that a bunch of us were looking at each other going, holy Toledo, it is bad news up there. There may be some of you out there who have gone onto the FEMA site to see what you need to have and the amount of goods you need to have stored up for this type of disaster. I think the rule of thumb is 3 days of food, water, etc. A lot of us really disagree with that. Better plan on a week to 10 days, because who knows what external influences will keep help from getting to you in a timely manner.
A lot of problems, as we've been reading over the weeks, was that not only were roads and bridges cut off by floodwaters and people were stranded, but I mean, there was some serious infrastructural damage. I mean, reports are sort of just coming out now about water and irrigation systems being severely damaged, possibly taking years to rebuild, you know, in addition to the roads and bridges that the state has already jumped on. When you were there in Fort Collins, did you get a sense or did you see any of that sort of long-term infrastructural damage?
Access and egress out of that area is over for at least 2 years. So the lives of those folks up in the mountains, and there's literally thousands of them from the base of the mountains up to the Estes Park area, have been irretrievably changed. There's going to be a new normal. As far as the electricity goes, I didn't get a good feel for that, how soon it's going to take to get all that up. The importance of cell phones came out big time. And one of the things that that really helps us out is we can get portable cell phone towers delivered from Verizon, et cetera, at the drop of a hat. And I noticed a discussion in the New York Times yesterday about the criticality, now that we're totally dependent upon cell phones, of folks like myself, teams, responding with the ability to put back into place some basic communications infrastructure.
So, Hugh, you've fought plenty of fires in your day, and you've told me that you've also been involved with emergency operations and other floods, but how does the devastation of this one compare with what you've seen before?
This is the most disastrous all-hazards incident I've been on, easily. And it's the most intimately involved that I've been. There's a better way than the way we've been handling these disasters like the oil spill and Katrina and a few others of unworthy note, is the integration of these incident management teams. Here we've got 30 years of experience in this incident command system. Meanwhile, you've got millions who've been trained in it since 9/11, but they haven't had the experience. I think it's really good to take advantage of the federal agencies and some state like Southern California, local agencies like San Diego, LA, et cetera, take advantage of that vast wealth of experience that's out there to help these so-called newbies, the Seattle Police Department, the SWAT team from Ohio, through these things so that they can get on top of it.
You mentioned that when you first arrived on the scene of Fort Collins, there was a very calm and collected, organized sort of feeling, you know, with all the emergency operations going on. But what I'm wondering is whether you got the sense that the scale of this flood was just overwhelming for the infrastructure of emergency personnel there in Larimer County. I mean, were they prepared and trained to deal with a flood of this magnitude, or is this something that is going to sort of raise the standard for the kind of disasters that they prepare for in Larimer County and on the Front Range?
Due to their experience in High Park, where 356 homes burned down in their county, they were ready in some senses, and they were ready in what I consider the most important sense. They were ready with their A game because of the experience they went through on High Park. Those emergency responders, the sheriffs, the structural fire people, the elected and appointed authorities, they know now what it's like to be in the middle of it. I think that the only way you can get to that level of preparation is through training, simulated exercises that are real. So quality of simulation, and it has to be immersed simulation. And by that I mean real role players in costume, applying stress, situations that crank the operational tempo up by a couple orders of magnitudes, and then go out and do it.
Do you think that for the state of Colorado, these floods have sort of provided an opportunity for some lessons to be learned in terms of how we need to train, how we need to prepare for events like this?
I think that, and I know the head of the Emergency Operations Center in Denver for the state, Chad Ray, he's also my incident commander on my all-hazards team. We had several conversations with, or I had several conversations with Chad, and his assistant was permanently assigned to our team in Fort Collins, so there was plenty of opportunity to talk about the future. And I would put their level of commitment at very high to using the Boulder and the Larimer County floods as a lessons learned platform for every other county in Colorado.
Now, let me ask you lastly, during your time that you spent there, was there any one particular experience that really stuck with you?
The feeling I had when that first load came off the Chinook and walked by me with their kids and their dogs and their pet goldfish. We rescued over 500 pets. It was pretty neat. Monkeys, parakeets, goldfish, dogs, cats, bunnies, et cetera, et cetera. And the guard was really proud of that. Yeah, that was especially fulfilling to me, especially on day one. This is why I'm here, is to make that happen over and over and over and over and over again until this thing's over.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Local Motion here on KVNF, and I've been speaking with Hugh Carson, who is called over from the Western Slope to Larimer County in the wake of historic flooding there to serve as the Air Operations Director and help with emergency response there. Hugh, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for giving us sort of an insider look into how you guys dealt with this historic flood.
You're more than welcome. I really like to come back here and convey lessons learned and some sense of what it was all about so that folks in the local area can take those lessons to the bank, so to speak. So my pleasure.
And we will be featuring on our website a slideshow and possibly some video footage that was captured in Larimer County during the time that Hugh spent there. So stay tuned to KVNF's website for that info in the coming weeks. That'll be at kvnf.org. Hugh, thank you so much again for coming in.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Local Motion here on KVNF. I'm Travis Bubenik. Thanks for joining us. And remember that this program now airs at a new time, 6 to 6:30 every Tuesday evening. It's part of our new schedule, which you can find complete details on at our website, kvnf.org, where you can also find past episodes of Local Motion. Thanks for tuning in, and stick around for The Treatment coming up in just a minute.
KVNF's annual meeting is coming up Thursday, October 24th in Paonia Town Hall at 6 p.m. It's an opportunity for members, DJs, staff, and board to discuss the station's accomplishments and consider the challenges and opportunities of the year ahead. We also have some important and exciting business to take care of. We'll be drawing the name of the winner for the free trip to Fiji. If you haven't bought your raffle tickets yet, there's still time. We also have a proposed bylaw change to raise KVNF's annual membership fee from $25 to $35. Members can vote at the meeting. A homemade soup and bread buffet will be provided, and we'll host a special Film Less screening and discussion of short audio documentaries produced by KVNF and others. It's KVNF's annual meeting, Thursday, October 24th, Paonia Town Hall, 6 p.m. See you there.